everybody.
More about a guest you heard on the radio.
Maybe you're out fishing and missed an episode. Want to catch up? Well, now you can. Facebook.com/Fishing Canada to learn more about your favorite outdoor shows, Fishing Canada Television, and Outdoor Journal Radio. Search the archive and download hundreds of radio episodes.
Like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at ODJ Radio.
And, of course, listen live, the Outdoor Journal Radio Show. More than ever, your definitive guide to the great outdoors.
Welcome back to the program. Hour number two, almost upon us. Almost here.
Yes.
I was jumping the gun there.
Yeah.
You were wondering where I was going with that, weren't you?
Yeah. Well, you got to go or something? Do I have to host the show afterwards?
No. I do have to get ready. I'm going down east. I told you that.
Yes.
I'm going to, where am I going? Economy, Nova Scotia.
Yes.
Do some striper bass fishing. It's like a great adventure, by the way.
It's like a kid. You're like a kid in a candy store. You're so excited because you're back on the road.
I've been off the road for 2 months.
It's true.
That sounds like a small thing, but when you spend your entire life on the road, a week is an eternity. And this past 2 months, it's been difficult.
Yeah, you've got that fishing itch too.
Well, right? It's not just the fishing itch; it's the travel, it's the adventure, it's a wilderness. I love being out there. I've been out there for the last almost 40 years doing television in the wilds. I've been on some great adventures, but all of that, I say all of that because our next guest makes that look like kindergarten classes. Okay, I thought I was a worldly explorer.
With the Gucci glasses.
Well, no, I'm going more farther back than that. You know, with Outdoor Journal Television, we went all over the world doing our thing and shooting stuff, and it was fantastic. But then when I read some of the accomplishments from our next guest, I'm a little embarrassed to say that I'm an outdoors person, to be honest with you. Oh, my goodness. This guy has got, first of all, he's got a PhD from McMaster University. So there's, one big difference between us.
Check.
He's an explorer, a naturalist, an author, and he is a prolific writer and has several bestsellers, including Alone Against the North. It's a number one bestseller that's on the marketplace. Joining us this morning is Adam Schultz, who has been described as Canada's Indiana Jones. I've never been called Indiana Jones or compared to him. Okay?
You wear the hat, though.
I did wear the hat for a number of years on the program. I have to agree. Anyways, a fascinating gentleman joins us now. Good morning, Adam. How are you?
Oh, I'm very well. Thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Absolute pleasure, although a little embarrassing to say that I'm an outdoorsman and been traveling all over the world doing wild, crazy things. When I see what you've accomplished, holy smokes. Wow. That's exciting, brother. Very exciting. Well,
there's a lot of different types of outdoors people, I guess. I mean, it's one of the great things about the outdoors. I mean, it's such a range of things you can do, from fishing to hunting to canoeing to kayaking to rock climbing. So yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why I love it, right? Such a big range of stuff to do in the outdoors.
It means a lot of different things to a lot of different folks, and you're right. That's what we all love about it. Now, when our producer originally contacted you to come on the program, you weren't available for that date to do an interview because you were on a remote northern expedition. Tell us about that, would you?
Well, I was up in the Western Arctic. I mean, I spend much of the year off the grid, so I don't even have access to a phone normally, but I think when they emailed me, I was up in the Western Arctic in the Northwest Territories. I was canoeing a pretty isolated river there, the Anderson River. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Yep, I have, as a matter of fact. Yep.
Yeah, it flows into the Beaufort Sea. So I was on that river. I was doing an expedition for the Royal Canadian Geographical Society, and I was searching for an explorer who had gone down that river 100 years ago and never came back. So I was doing a bit of historical research and looking for any clues or traces to his disappearance on that expedition.
How did you make out? Did you find anything?
Oh, yes. I found some very interesting things, but I can't say too much publicly about it just yet. I'm working on a new book about that expedition and this explorer who disappeared there, but it's not quite ready yet. So that's a future project at the moment.
Well, whoever he is, he might have been, he might have had an opportunity to write what you wrote, and that is Alone Against the North, a fascinating book. It's about your solo tripping, this one particular trip. Now, how long was the trip that was the basis and the background for this book?
For Alone Against the North? Well, yeah. It was really a whole series of trips between, spread out over about a 5-year period. So it was, maybe a dozen expeditions in total, but, that was all up in the Hudson Bay lowlands. So around Hudson and James Bay, which is one of my favorite areas to go exploring. I mean, I've been all different wilderness from the Amazon to the Arctic, but I have to say the Hudson James Bay lowland, maybe because it's a giant swamp, the third biggest wetland on Earth. It's probably the most pristine environment I've ever seen. I mean, you can wander for hundreds of kilometers in the lowlands and never see any sign of human presence whatsoever. No pop cans, no litter, no cabins, nothing. But yeah, that's where those expeditions took place, in the Hudson Bay lowlands. And I mean, it's a pretty amazing landscape, but probably my favorite fact of all about the Hudson Bay lowlands, and this maybe explains why it's so unvisited even now, is that it actually has the highest concentration of blood-sucking insects on planet Earth in the summer months.
Well, that's nice. Wow. Talk to us about that.
Well, I have a video that I filmed there maybe 5 years ago. It was, you know, early July, and I was on some nameless river up near the coast of Hudson Bay in polar bear territory, and I've been hacking through trackless muskeg for weeks, and the black flies and the mosquitoes were insane. It was like literally storm clouds of them. If you took a deep breath, you would have inhaled half a dozen mosquitoes. If people want to see that, they can go on my YouTube channel, and they can see the video of it, because it's one of those things. I mean, I can describe it, but it has to be seen to be believed. You can watch this video of millions of black flies and mosquitoes around my head.
Wow. I've been in situations similar to that, and it is completely overwhelming, even for short periods of time. I can't even start to try and envision you struggling through that days on end by yourself. How long did you spend over this period of time that you wrote did all the research for this book? How much time went by? How many years?
For Alone Against the North? Well, yeah. It's really the story of a 5-year stretch between 2008 through 2013, when I was obsessed with one river up in the Hudson Bay lowlands. And it was a very mysterious river, very obscure. I mean, it's not a big river by any means. I mean, in the Hudson Bay lowlands alone, you have thousands of different waterways. Some of them are very big, very well known, especially to the angling community, like the Attawapiskat River. But then you have, mm-hmm. you know, very small isolated rivers. So it was a very small river, only about 100 kilometers long. And there was no record of anyone actually canoeing it, because it's a very difficult river to canoe. It has low water levels. And as it turned out, it was just full of rapids and waterfalls. I mean, white water all the way down it. So I was obsessed with trying to reach this river. Hard to get to, too small to land a float plane on, no roads anywhere near it, no easy access point. And I ended up going back to the river multiple times and exploring it and mapping it and adding waterfalls to the map. So yeah, it was just kind of an obsession that kept driving me back there despite the bugs and all the other stuff that went with it. But I loved it. Yeah.
So one of the most difficult things that I recall on my journeys, and even, you know, portaging into places like Algonquin Park, for example, one of the most difficult things that most people have to deal with is trying to come up with the right balance of, food, sustenance, you know, because you have to pack everything in, therefore weight becomes an issue, and also volume becomes an issue, but you need nutrition to make these trips. And one of the most difficult things is coming up with that perfect balance, a perfect list. How do you deal with it when you go into some of these areas? I mean, do you bring any food with you at all?
It depends on the nature of the expedition I'm doing. I mean, I generally rely a lot on high calorie power bars and energy bars, builder bars. You know, I hit up some of those bodybuilding stores where they sell like the really high calorie bars, and I'll load myself up with those, because a lot of the expeditions I do, it's really a race against time. You know, I'm always, you know, pushing it late into the season in September when things are going to start to ice up. I'm going to get snow. So I usually have to make maximum use of my time, and, you know, stopping to cook a meal is sometimes not in the cards, especially if I'm canoeing on, you know, northern bodies of water, the Arctic Ocean. I might not be able to go back to shore. So I eat a lot of those bars. Like, I can eat 12 or 14 of them in a day, all the really high calorie ones. And then usually I only allow myself on an expedition one meal that's really cooked, just to save time. So that would usually be a freeze-dried meal. And again, I just choose my freeze-dried meals on the basis of whatever's got the most calories. Those are the ones I kind of load up on. And then, of course, I do a lot of fishing, and I eat fish whenever I can. And I eat a lot of wild edibles, berries and roots and those sorts of things as well.
What's the one big, in your opinion, having experienced this as often as you have, what's the one big factor that big issue that you have to face when you're traveling through remote areas? Is it like confidence? You have to go in there with a ton of confidence knowing that you will come out the other end. Is it the loneliness of not having another human being with you during that whole period? Weather, wildlife encounters. I mean, there's just a million things that are going through my mind. What's the one big issue for you that you need to wrestle with each time?
Well, I don't mind the solitude. Probably, the only thing that really, really scares me a little. I mean, people think, well, you got to be scared. You're camping alone in polar bear territory, or you're canoeing through ice fields, or, getting swept over waterfalls. But the only thing that really ever worries me at the back of my mind is it's not actually anything to do with the wilderness, or not directly. It's just something out of my control. Like, if I always think, it's funny, but I think, what if some freak medical emergency happened and like my appendix ruptured? Because if something like that happened, there wouldn't be any point going for search and rescue, because I know by the time any search and rescue helicopter got to where I am, I'll be dead. Like, I had a friend once and his appendix ruptured in southern Ontario. I mean, he was in outside St. Catharines, and his appendix ruptured, and they were rushing him to the hospital, and the surgeon said, if you'd gotten here half an hour later, you would have died. And I'm thinking, that's in southern Ontario, where we have hospitals all over the place. Can you imagine 1,000 kilometers from anything up in the high Arctic if something like that happens to you? So it's funny that that's kind of the thing that I fear more than polar bears or anything like that. But, usually I just try to set it aside and not dwell on it and focus at the task on hand, just sort of, paddle strokes, or put one boot in front of the other and keep going.
Do you, I'm assuming you have medicals on a regular basis in between trips then, or how do you get peace of mind on that end of it?
I don't know if I should say this. No, I don't even really do that. I just try to stay healthy, I've been pretty good in that sense. But, I try to put that out of my mind and just do what I have to do. Usually what I comfort myself with is I just think of all my predecessors, the Voyageurs, the Courier de Bois, the Explorers. Yeah. The First Nations, and I'm like, those guys, they were doing expeditions for centuries out here, and they didn't have even 1/100th the luxuries of the gear and the technology I have. So I think, if Alexander Mackenzie and David Thompson could do it in the old days, then surely I should be okay with everything I have, all this modern technology and modern gear. So I just try to comfort myself with that kind of logic.
It's funny, being in a similar business as you're in, or industry as you're in, people have a perception of what is the biggest thrill of your life. And I often disappoint people. They ask me and I give them my answer. They say, I thought it was when you, and I thought, how about when you did? And so I got to ask you that same question. What's been the biggest high of your career in terms of exploring the wilderness? What's been that one thing that you just keep going back to in your mind over and over again?
Well, it probably in 2017 for Canada 150, I set myself the task as a Canada 150 project of trying to cross Canada's Arctic alone. So it was a 4,000-kilometer journey from near the Alaskan border to the coast of Hudson Bay. And it was an incredible adventure. I loved every moment of it. Even when the black flies were eating me alive, I was just kind of happy to be there. But over the course of that four-month solo journey, it was 4 months alone, I had some really amazing encounters with wild animals, especially wolves, Arctic wolves. And that's probably the moment, that's the memory I'll cherish the most. I was just before I reached the coast of Great Bear Lake, because my route took me along the north shore of Great Bear Lake, which is above the Arctic Circle. And I remember just before I got to Great Bear Lake, it was June. I started my trek in May, and I didn't know if the lake would still be iced up and if I'd have to try to drag my canoe across the ice or how I would cross the lake. And I remember I came around this bend on a small, obscure river, and there was this beautiful, huge Arctic wolf just standing on the bank there. And he just looked right at me, no more than 20 feet away. And he kind of cocked his head to his side like he was totally curious, like he'd never seen a human before. And, he just stared at me. And he ended up following me, just kind of following along for a kilometer or two, looking at me, very curious. And, I snapped some pictures of them and looked at them. And that's probably, to see an animal like that, an Arctic wolf in the wild, and to lock eyes with it, that's probably the thing I cherish most from all my adventures. It's just those rare encounters with wild animals, getting to see these amazing animals in their natural habitat out in the wilderness. It's a really almost magical experience.
Well, I got to tell you, my friend, it's no secret how you're able to become such an accomplished writer. You articulate that so well. I mean, I was there with you while you were telling that story, and that's fantastic. Absolutely outstanding. You do a lot of public speaking engagements, I see. Tell us about that.
Well, I do quite a bit when I'm back from my expeditions, and especially when I have a new book coming out, which coincidentally I do. I have a new book hitting stores on Tuesday.
Nice.
Yeah, so you guys kind of get like a sneak preview. This is the first media interview I've done about the new book. So it'll be out in stores across Canada on Tuesday. It's called Beyond the Trees. Beyond the Trees, A Journey Alone Across Canada's Arctic. So it's all about my encounters with wolves and ice floes and bears on that journey alone across the Arctic. And, yeah, as part of that, I'm going to be visiting a lot of libraries and schools.
Oops, we just lost Adam there. We'll see if we can get hooked up again, or certainly we'll. That was great. That was absolutely outstanding. Anyways, if you want more information about the book and maybe his tour, where he's going to be available, you can certainly go to adamschultz.com. It's Adam Schultz, and Schultz is S-H-O-A-L-T-S, not the usual Schultz. S-H-O-A-L-T-S. We'll have it up on odjradio.com as well. Fascinating, gentlemen. Thank you, Adam. More journal after this. Don't you dare go away.